Hey guys, I know a lot of you are like me, busy or sometimes even forget to get some of your groceries. But worry not, because you can get fresh, fast groceries delivered to you with Pick and Pay ASAP. And you can also get 75 Rand off your first shop if you use the code FRESHASAP. Now that's fresh. Hello, Wisdom and Wellness family. I am so excited about today's conversation. I literally had to say cut and start again because we have been going on. Today, I am sitting with the incredible Justice Mukedi. I hope I said your surname right. He's a painter, film director, and photographer, born and bred in Soweto, and his work explores themes of race, gender, sexuality, love, and hope. And this man can talk. We have been talking. He started with my husband. I'm just like, stop stealing my whole conversation. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for the wonderful intro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited to have you.
Yeah.
I'm going to start with some icebreakers.
Yeah.
If you could travel to one country for the rest of your life, like every time it's holidays, like you can only go back to this one country.
Yeah.
Where would it be?
Nigeria.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, what is it about Nigeria?
It's soulful. It's everything you are told it's not.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it has a lot of soul. The people are beautiful.
Yeah.
Inside and out.
And
it's
food?
A beautiful country. I mean, unfortunately, I've never connected with the food that well.
Okay.
But it's more the people.
Okay.
The people are amazing. The land is amazing.
And you've traveled quite a lot, no?
Yeah,
like
I
outside
have.
Of the continent and
everything. Everywhere. Well, okay. A lot of places, yes.
Okay, now we know to go to Nigeria.
Yeah.
What's the last meal that you had?
Now?
Just, I don't know. What did you eat?
Oh, I had scrambled eggs, toast, bacon, evo.
Okay.
Yeah.
Giving English. What are you having for lunch?
I don't know. Maybe I'll have seven colors. Yes, pop.
Seven colors on a Tuesday in the middle of
I have that every day.
Every day?
If I can, yes.
Oh, but you've got abs.
Yeah, because luckily I am blessed with good genetics.
Okay.
And I exercise a lot.
Like every day?
Yeah, 6 days a week.
Okay.
Yeah.
I get it. If you could come back as a rapper or like a cool producer, who would it be?
Whew. My favorite rapper now, I've got
don't
two.
Don't be deep. We need to know the person.
I don't think you'll know them.
Exactly.
Navy Blue and Chuck Strangers.
For some reason, I thought you were going to say Pharrell Williams.
Musically, he's not up there for me.
Not musically, just personality. But I mean, I don't know you
that
well.
No, definitely not personality. I mean, he's cool.
Yeah.
He's cool. He's influenced us a whole...
And laid back.
Teens. Yeah, he's laid back. He's kick-ass. I would, maybe personality, I'd go for Mos Def.
Mos Def.
Yasin Bey.
Okay.
Yeah,
I like his I know Mos Def, but I don't know their music. But
his music is amazing.
Okay.
But if, musically, definitely Yasin Bey, and personality, I like him. He's late and he's super stylish and offbeat, which I like. Yeah.
Okay. Biggest purchase you made this year?
I don't know. Is big price or?
Price.
Sure. Oh, I bought a G-Wagon.
Dream cars.
And no, it's a classic G-Wagon.
Okay, I've seen it. The Venture, original Venture.
For sure.
And how did it feel? Did it feel better buying it or like dreaming for it was better?
Definitely buying it felt great.
Is it?
Yeah, dreaming. I mean, dreaming about something is cool, but you don't have it. You're still dreaming. So my dream became a reality, especially the classic, you know?
I find, and I'm asking that because I find sometimes the dream and the process towards the dream is always better than the actual thing.
I mean, if I want to be deep, I'd say yes, but I don't agree. That's not my
your experience.
My experience. Yes, the journey working towards whatever I'd love to achieve is good, but it's definitely not better than achieving what I'm working towards.
I love it.
Honestly, that's for me.
And I love it. Yeah. I don't know if you remember the first time we met.
Your husband just reminded me.
Why did he do that? Do you remember though? Did you remember?
Yeah.
Tell me your version.
I mean, I was still working with my brother in Vuyo and Neo, as I see it, different you and Ongama.
Yeah.
and we got an opportunity to shoot a commercial photography for
console.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we casted a lot of beautiful people.
Yeah.
And you were amongst them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we photographed in Maboneng
in
a penthouse. And it was late. Yeah, it was nice.
Do you know what I remember about that day?
Mm.
I had just dropped out of varsity, right?
Okay.
So I was in like a horrible place. And I was trying out castings and everything. And it was my first ever casting and I got it.
Yeah.
And it felt like, okay, so my future is not gone.
Yeah.
And we shot the commercial, the TV one.
Yeah, yeah.
And we spent the whole day there. You guys weren't part of that.
The TV one.
We spent the whole day there. And like, I could see Wootsie, the camera didn't even look at me once. Like, you know, when you're like an extra. And I was so down. And then we went for the photography. I don't remember what you and your brother said to me.
Yeah.
But I remember how you guys made me feel. You made me feel like I have been doing this for years. I am the best person to ever do it.
Yeah,
and every time I've seen, like, years after that, every time I've seen, I'm like, oh, I remember how those guys made me feel.
I'm glad we made you feel that way. I mean, it's our ethos, unspoken.
Yeah.
Because other people had to believe in us without any experience that we are amazing and the best at what we do when we haven't done it yet. So I love doing that for other people because... Yeah. Yeah, everyone is the best. Yeah.
We need it.
Yeah, yeah.
I heard you speak at Agenda Women, and there's a specific part that I want to touch on when it comes to the father wound, right?
Mm.
Which is it's a really big one and it's not spoken about enough, but I feel like it's becoming a conversation. And if I'm not mistaken, you mentioned that the last time you saw your father, I think, was at the age of 7?
So... I was 12 when he left.
Yeah.
Yeah, he left when I was 12. Then I saw him again when I was 21, late 21.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And have you seen him since then?
Yeah, I mean, we asked him to come back home in the house that we grew up in because we were fortunate to be able to buy our mom a house in the suburbs so that she can have a life similar to what we are having.
Sure.
Then we asked our dad to come back because life wasn't too kind to him.
Sure. Wait, so Nimcelele love back. So now...
No, not love back. Just him coming back home.
Yeah.
Epimville.
Yeah.
Because my mom is not staying there anymore.
Oh, okay. Yes. I see.
Yeah.
Now, what I want to talk about is how your life was from, I guess, from the time you were born up until 12, having a father present.
Yeah.
And then that disconnect and how and who you became as soon as he just like left. It's like 1 minute you've got a father for the first 12 years of your life and then next thing is gone. And it's not gone because he's passed on.
Yeah, yeah.
He's gone because I suppose he chose to go.
Yeah. To be with other women. So,
okay. I wasn't gonna say that.
I mean, our fathers do that. We do that.
Sure.
So anyway, from when I was born till I was 12, my dad was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, he's amazing. He was our best friend. My first interest in art was through him. He made a drawing of my brother and I sitting beside him, listening to jazz, which he enjoyed doing that with my brother and I. So that gave us a musical ear and an interest in music. That's why we started making music. But he was amazing.
Sure.
We'd run together. My interest in being an athlete was through him.
Mm.
So he was present. He was a friend. He was a father. He was firm, he was soft, he was kind, he was strong. He was all the good things.
Yeah.
Then he left. And when he left, I would say that was my first heartbreak.
Yeah.
And that is similar to romantic heartbreak.
Sure.
You know, because also he left without explanation. And when he left... He asked my brother and I to walk him to the bus stop because he was going to visit his mom in Venda. And we walked him and we never saw him until we were 21.
Hi, Bo. So it's a normal day.
Yeah.
Ubaba's just going home to visit.
Yeah.
Niamkapa. I'm sure the goodbye was casual.
Yeah, it was casual as we were. And my dad... We were so close every day when he comes back from work, we'd be... Around 5:30 would be outside the house, just playing, waiting
yeah,
for
like
him.
Yeah, like waiting for him. Yeah.
Yeah, so that when we see him walk, he had a distinctive, you know, gassy walk.
Yeah.
In his dickies. So when he's walking down, we'd see him and run up to him.
Sure.
So if I go to Pimville to date just after 5 o'clock, and I'm waiting around there, I still see an image of him walking down.
Sure.
So yeah, it's.
So now the next day, like when do you realize as a child with he?
After 3 months.
After 3 months?
Yeah.
That's when it clocks, Uguti, this person's not coming back.
Yeah, my mom told us that she had a conversation with him that was confusing. And he said he's not coming back. And she said she's going to go to his mom's house to go see and hear if he actually means it or what it is. And he said she mustn't come. But lucky our mother spoke us through everything that was going on. So we didn't have to formulate stories.
Yeah. You knew exactly what was happening.
Yeah. And it was tough because I got angry.
Yeah.
And I did not understand for a long time. Then I remember having a conversation with him over the phone when I was 18.
Mm. You called him?
Yeah, I called him. And I was asking him, he got a retirement package.
Mm.
So I was struggling at school. I was not doing well. And my brother had dropped out. My brother dropped out at grade 9.
Sure.
So I was, I think, in grade 11 or 10.
You were 20.
I was
18 at the time.
Yeah, I was 18 in grade 10.
Sure.
And I wanted to leave school. So I called him to ask him to help me get into an art college or just the college so that I can do, what do they call, N3?
Yeah.
Because I could do more technical work than academic work.
Yeah.
And I had a tough conversation with him, asking him. Then after asking him to help me, he asked me, how old am I? And I said, I'm 18. And he said, at 18, he had an ID, he had a job and a family. Sure. So I shouldn't be entitled to him helping me. And this phone call is ridiculous. And I should never call him again for stupid things. I must be a man and go get a job. And that was tough. And
sure.
Yeah, when he said that, I mean, it hurt like,
it's nothing painful else. Hearing you say it now.
Yeah, but I'm grateful for that moment because it made me lean into myself and not seek help.
Not depend on others. That,
yeah, I am all I have.
Yeah.
Well, including my brother.
Well, that explains your work ethic, because I was listening to an interview and you're like, if someone's going to hand in like two assignments or whatever, you and your brother are going to hand in 20 because you're going to outwork everyone.
Yeah, because hard work is all I have.
Sure.
You know, if my mom had the means, she'd help us.
Yeah.
You know, if anyone in my family, if they had the means, they would. But at that time, they didn't have the means. So all the dreams we have for ourselves and our family, we had to make them happen.
How did it change you? Did you notice, and thinking back now as a 38-year-old man, right?
Yeah.
How do you remember a distinctive, an exact moment where you realize you're changing? Because I think of your childhood and I can imagine a playful, happy boy who's got his father, who runs to his father. And then there's this drastic change and you have to deal with it. So how can you go back to how you changed as a boy to a man based on that one father experience?
Yeah. I mean, it was super difficult, but my mom showed up for us.
Mm.
You know, my mom held us together and made sure we don't feel like we are lacking anything.
Yeah.
And as you would know, black communities are incredible. Everyone comes together to raise children.
Yeah.
So in our neighborhood, in our church, we had father figures, we had uncles, we had every support that we needed, even though we knew that our own is not around.
Sure.
Then I also became delusional and formulated a story that I wanted to believe so that I can make it through this pain.
Sure. What story was that?
Yeah, I'd just make up the idea of my father still being around and is successful. And if someone asks me about my dad, I'd speak as if he's still around. Even my friends, until much later in our life,
knew
that our father is not around very late.
So the whole time you and your brother are just pretending, like, as if...
Because it's not a reality I was willing to accept.
Sure.
And kids are hateful.
Yeah.
When I reflect, kids are hateful, you know. And it was, I can imagine I was hateful to other kids too, because growing up in our community, my brother and I were the only ones that had both parents.
Oh, okay.
So I recall being a kid, you know, boasting that, I live with my mom and dad, you know, in primary school. And none of the students lived with both their parents.
Sure.
You know, so that made me formulate an idea that's not there. And I'm grateful for it, because for that time, that's what I needed.
Yeah.
You know?
That's painful. Yeah. Now, going back to this father wound, I was listening to a conversation between Mike Todd, and he talks a lot about trauma, and there's a specific line he says, like, what doesn't get transformed gets transferred, right?
Yeah.
How are you making sure that you are not projecting or continuing the pain that a man instilled in you, like in the way that you treat women, in the way that you treat your new wife, your godson, and your future children, should you have?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of therapy.
Yeah.
A lot of, I do three different types of therapies.
Aibo. When? Yeah. It's like a priority in your life.
Yeah, it is. It's like, if you don't service your car, it's not going to be healthy. You know?
Okay.
And with all the therapy and work that I do, I'm still not perfect. I'm still a work in progress. Yeah. I've slipped up. I've made bad choices. I've been hateful.
Yeah.
And sometimes, most of the time, it's unintentional.
Yeah. What are the three types of therapy that you do?
So I've got dyslexia.
Yes.
So I do a therapy called NLP for my dyslexia, but the NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming, is so powerful that I do it for both my dyslexia and my personal work.
Okay.
So those are two that I do.
Oh, two that you do, yeah?
Yeah, then I do just regular
counseling.
Counseling, yeah.
Sure.
Then, yeah, I mean, I would say if it counts, my wife does a lot of therapy for me.
What do you mean?
She's my therapist.
Okay, so she offers a safe space for
you. For parts of my life I can discuss with her.
Okay.
Because, you know, therapy is personal, and some things you don't want to talk about, things you are going through to your wife that could trigger her.
And sometimes I think even as a wife, it's very hard because you don't necessarily have the tools to support someone. Like, it's just like, okay, in this moment, do I need to give advice? Or in this moment, do I need to just listen? Or like how do I hold space and make sure that this person feels space? Especially because we grew up and a lot of men just are not willing to open up. So when the opening up happens, it's like, I've never seen this. Like, how do I handle this? Like, what must happen?
We don't open up because we are ashamed.
Yeah.
If I open up to a woman, not just my woman, about if I'm going through a rough time financially, I'm going to be shamed.
It depends who you open. Okay, generally.
Generally, yeah, because the general answer to that is window danger. Even though they might not say it to your face.
Sure.
Window danger.
Well, how do you think as women we should handle it better? Because now remember what patriarchy did, and you speak a lot about this, is that patriarchy taught us that a man provides.
Yeah, for sure.
A man is strong. And only now are we grappling with that, oh, men don't be strong anymore. Like, we don't need you to be strong. And that is still a thing. But the whole provision thing, it's now we must switch to now as a woman, you're also, like, it's a whole lot of changes that are happening at the same time, yeah. and we don't know how to handle them. Yeah. And unfortunately, the financial one, I guess, is the hardest, because yeah. a man has been positioned as a provider. Like, we didn't talk to our fathers. Our fathers just brought the money home.
To the table. Yeah, I mean, if I think about it, raising a child is not a financial thing only, you know.
Yeah.
For me, I didn't grow up in a wealthy family at yeah. all. We were not middle class. But the time I spent with my dad, even though I knew he had no money,
yeah.
was amazing.
Yeah, that meant
you know, I knew. You know, it's tough in your family if you know the budget.
Yeah. yeah.
You know, I knew the budget.
yeah.
But I was very happy because sure. my dad was there.
Sure.
You yeah. know, and I think patriarchy taught us a lot of things, and there's good and bad, you know. And in the conversation of men can be soft and you don't have to be strong and all that, I think the expectation women have on men, they should be able to uphold the same, you know.
Agreed.
Yeah, because I can't be expected to hold it down. Actually, there's an exception for a man who is doing well rather than a man who's not.
there's someone who said on Twitter, which I actually think is a little true, that yeah. Men aren't loved unconditionally. Women are loved unconditionally.
Yeah, because who has time for a broke man?
I'm going to challenge you on this. Mm. You know what? And I think, if you think about it, think of the families you grew up around, right?
Yeah.
Where there were fathers at home.
Yeah.
Most times.
Yeah.
The woman was the one bringing it home, like bringing the money home.
Yeah.
But the woman positioned the man as the one who's bringing it home.
Yeah.
However, the man couldn't handle that. Mm. And then in turn, their character, they didn't do work on themselves. So now you're not only dealing with someone who's not helping you financially. Now you're dealing with a broken person who's insecure and making you feel bad about showing up.
Mm.
So do you understand the cycle?
No, I understand the cycle, but it's a cycle that us as a society we created, because the space is not safe.
Yeah, for anyone.
Yeah, imagine, it's not safe between men.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm with my homeboys and I know my homeboy has a wife and children and he's broke.
Yeah.
I'm not a safe space to him either. Even though we understand as men that, you know, it's tough.
Yeah.
But I'll have judgment towards him. So imagine he can't feel safe
yeah.
in what's supposed to be his safest place
yeah.
amongst other men.
Yeah.
When he gets home, his wife is the one that's bringing in the money.
Yeah.
And she gives him the bank card. And when she gives him the bank card, he feels emasculated. Instead
yeah.
of embracing and appreciating that,
yeah.
he becomes bitter. And he wants to control her money. He wants to be extra tough.
Yeah.
He becomes abusive
yeah.
physically and emotionally, and tough to the kids, because he himself doesn't know how to handle that. And yes, there's a parallel conversation alongside that what is he doing? Why doesn't he try with what he have to bring something to the table?
Yeah.
You know, but some people get so overwhelmed by all of that.
They
can't rise above it.
Yeah.
Am I sympathetic? Yeah, to a point. But, you know, my patriarchy just makes me think that, hey, man, just tough it out and do something. Yeah.
Something.
Something,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, at 18 years old, you were told, Guti.
Yeah, I mustn't. Yeah.
Like, get up and go.
You know, so, yeah, it's a tough conversation. And my position at this is still work in progress. But I do have sympathy for men and for women, going through this challenge.
Yeah.
It's in a difficult marriage one. Or relationship.
It's really a difficult conversation, but I think it's one that it really has to be had, especially just even just amongst women, the whole like deconstruction, that whole idea of you. It's like the Bible. And society outside tells you a man protects, but it almost feels like everything society says a man does in the home, it's the woman who's doing that. So there's a bit of a confusion.
Sure.
And I feel like I think truth will set us all free.
That
we all protect, we all provide,
yeah.
we all of a safe space.
Yeah, I mean, I think for us and our society, our generation,
yeah,
maybe I'll speak for myself, the idea of a man who protects and provide and whatever, you know, you bring in the money, you do this, you do that, I'm the leader, I'm this. I don't think it's entirely true. It's what you are told.
Not true. Yeah.
You know, even when I observed, my dad is the one that worked at home, but I know my mom held it down.
Yeah.
You know, it's not money that builds a home.
No.
Between my wife and I, we don't have children yet. You know, I may be the primary earner.
Yeah.
But everything she does in the household far outweighs the money I bring.
Sure.
Everything.
And that's the therapy speaking.
No, it's not.
No, it's awareness. It's self-awareness.
Yeah.
It's and self-awareness.
You know, I would challenge men with wives and children to ask themselves those questions honestly. What would your household be without your wife? Would you know where a headache tablet sits?
Yeah.
And we really overlook those things.
Yeah.
You know, would you know what to do if the child is not well?
Yeah.
You know, would you know where to take them? Would would you know what to do at 3 o'clock so that at 6 o'clock when you arrive, everything you need is provided for? Would you know?
I have a question for you. Yeah. Do you think you would, considering your whole, your life and your patriarchy ways, do you think you'd be able to handle a home where your wife is the primary provider and you are the one who knows where the headache tablet is?
Truthfully and honestly, no.
Okay.
I wouldn't let myself be provided for.
What if everything is taken away from you? And it's,
what?
Let's say it's COVID, another lockdown, and you can't sell your art, you can't.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, God forbid, everything gets taken away from you. And all you have is the home, and your wife's job is thriving, and you have to handle everything you've built around her handling.
Yeah.
Because your understanding or where you are right now is, I love the position of providing.
Yeah, I mean, truthfully, I don't know if I'd be able to do that. Because I would fight for my life to be able to provide within what I have.
Okay.
You know, there are so many avenues to explore, to kick back.
Well, then that's the pride of a man. And then that's the pride that I think the other people we were talking about are struggling with, where it's like, my pride is being eaten away every single day and there's nothing I can do about it.
I would never not do anything about it.
Yeah.
I'd go to call center and work. Or wash cars. I'll come up with ideas. I'll do gardens.
Yeah.
I'll do everything I can with what I have to be able to
take care of the family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alongside my wife.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how much more she brings. It does not matter. That's not going to challenge me.
Okay.
What's going to challenge me is sitting around
doing nothing,
accepting that I don't have the means.
I love that to you bring mentioned my, that.
Yeah.
Now you did grade 11 at the age of 20.
21. Grade 12. Oh, you said grade 11?
Grade 11. Did you get to grade 12?
I got to grade 12.
But you were 21.
Yes.
And most of your peers are obviously in varsity, right?
Yeah.
And you mentioned repeating almost every grade.
Yeah, for sure.
But you didn't know that you've got dyslexia.
Yeah, I had no idea. Until I got to grade 11, I was told by a teacher who was amazing that, you're not dumb, you just have dyslexia and we can work around it. And unfortunately, she left the school.
Sure.
So everyone who was a teacher then did not know what I needed.
Sure.
All they knew was that this is dumb.
Yeah, failure, lomfa.
Yeah.
No failure. But now as a kid, man, and I can think of so many kids I went to school with, because I went to like an Afrikaans school, and like we were grouped according to how smart you were. So I knew that every year I'm working towards to be in grade 6.1. Like once you go to grade 6.3, like you are the damn
student.
And how did you deal with that? How did you even manage to get to Ngizoqeda, even if it means I'm the ancestor of the class?
I mean, first of all, my relentless effort to try get to grade 12 and finish was to please my mom.
Oh.
But I knew that I'm not gonna get through.
Sure.
So I stuck it out for her. Lucky, my mom is very affirming and she's my brother and I's biggest fan.
Yeah.
And she always affirmed us that you are not dumb, they just don't understand you.
Mm.
You know, there's so much to life than all of what's expected of you at school.
Mm.
You know, you'll be so much more than what everyone thinks.
Sure.
You know, so she affirmed us. I never, even though teachers were hurtful and say I'm stupid and this, there's never been a day where I felt I was.
Wow.
You know, because the person that matters affirmed me.
Affirmed you the most.
Yeah, you know.
I think of a moment, one of the most significant moments in my life as a child.
Mm.
I was not an A student, but I could work hard enough to be an A student, right?
Yeah.
I'm like you, like I will outwork you.
Yeah,
I might not be the smartest, most talented in the room, but I will outwork you, right?
Yeah.
And I remember being in, was it grade 8? Yes, it was in grade 8, high school, and we were writing an accounting test.
Mm.
And I studied, and I was surrounded by really smart friends, right? Pushed me, and I studied just as hard, if not more, as they did. And this one teacher was calling out the marks, and she was calling them out loud. But I'm chilled because I studied and I'm hearing my friends, Althea, 82%, Pagzas, 90%. Like everybody, no one in the class is getting a low mark. So I'm good.
Mm.
And at the time I was Amanda at school and they say, Amanda, 42%. And I remember, like I'm still getting emotional as I think about it, my whole system crashing, like, how can you embarrass me like that? Like, couldn't you call me on the side?
Yeah, yeah.
And from that day on, I went to another accounting teacher and I said, how do I make sure I get a distinction by the end of matric?
Yeah.
And she told me, and end of matric, I got 79% in accounting. But then I went into an accounting field and I realized now that I chose to study something I didn't even like because of that one little trauma. I wanted to prove a point.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned a story where a teacher was coming and they asked you to write your name, Justice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you couldn't and you were panicking and you even asked your brother.
Yeah.
How has that moment shaped you?
Yeah, I mean, it shaped me in a very negative way because it took away all my confidence in myself, especially when it comes to reading and writing.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I go to NLP therapy for my dyslexia.
Yeah.
You know, so we changed schools from a school in Soweto to a school in El Dorado Park.
Yeah.
And in Soweto, my name is Rendani.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I knew how to write Rendani.
Yeah.
Then now I have to switch. And Rendani was not on my ID. So I have to switch and use Justice, which is on my ID.
Sure.
And at the school I went to, we were not so active in English.
Mm.
So this teacher came and she said I must write my name and it was so difficult for me. I got so nervous, I didn't even know my first letter.
Sure.
And she shamed me, you know, and my brother and I in front of the whole class.
Mm.
You know, and what the consequence of that made me in my job as a film director, I present a lot. And it became a challenge presenting because once I look at the words, I get so scared and it takes me back into that teacher's class. Yeah, I mean, I'm doing therapy on that, so it's so much better now.
Yeah, but it's still
But sometimes it doesn't go away. Sometimes I'd be trying to read and something triggers me.
Mm.
Then I'm stuck and I'm scared and everything that I wrote in my treatment, I forget because now I'm in Mrs. Zuma's class.
Yeah.
You know, and NLP therapy helps me have tools that get me out of that fear.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, I mean it was tough, but and it made me not like reading and writing.
Yeah.
And I'd be so scared to read out loud especially.
Yeah.
But my job requires me to do that.
Yeah.
And Yeah, I had to start reading and learning how to read. So I read every night out loud to my wife. And
every single night.
Yeah, and she has to sit there and affirm me.
Yeah.
That, oh, wow, that was good or whatever. So that, because my career, amongst others, is all I have.
Yeah.
So I need to invest in it.
Yeah.
I need to not feel sorry for myself because no one cares.
Sure.
You know?
How did you, how do you not, I'm going to say how did you and how do you not quit? Because the, I'm going to say the status quo, not even the status quo, the whole, when we think of a boy from Ekasi, and in context like you, who, struggling at school, gets labeled. And they fall into that. Like they get into that character where everybody sees them as the naughty guy and they either, like they just, they become that naughty person, right? Like they go into that character because of all the labeling. And I can imagine how many other boys like you who just don't know this is what's happening and feel stupid and then go into a space where, anyway, this is what everybody says. So how did you... How do you not quit? Like, I need to understand your thinking. How do you not quit? How do you continue to say, I'm going to get in an industry that requires me to do the very same thing that is my biggest insecurity?
Yeah. I think it's two blessings. The blessing of my mom and the way she brought us up. She was very affirming.
Yeah.
You know, she always said to my brother and I, you guys are special.
Mm.
You guys are unique. Mm. You've got a beautiful future ahead of you. You are different.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the first blessing. And everything she affirmed us with and the kindness she instilled in us and raising us with love made me hold myself in high standards.
Okay.
Even though I was... I found myself in front of all those opportunities too.
Yeah.
When I was faced with those scenarios that could turn left, my whole life left, I always remembered that not me.
Mm,
I'm special.
There's someone who believes in me.
Yeah, I'm special. I've got so much more than going to be a drunk and a smoker and this.
Yeah.
So all her affirmation and love made me hold myself to a high standard. Then... the blessing of having my twin brother. Yes, for he was my role model for so long, for like all our lives.
But he dropped out at grade nine, right?
Yeah, but he was an incredible person.
Sure.
With vision, with heart, and with clarity.
Yeah.
You know, and he's down. He was down to earth. He's down to earth. So, and I was the bad twin.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I wouldn't think that.
So, so every time I step out of line, I'd remember I'm disappointing my brother. I can't do this to him.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Because we are not these kind of people. Mm. So even when life becomes tough, I always have that
my mom,
no,
my
I brother. Can't give up now.
Yeah.
You know, and I would say also, for me, if I give up, the people that get affected by my choice is so much more than just me.
Sure.
So I cannot give up.
Yeah.
You know?
People.
Yeah.
Can you think of, I like reflecting and I always think of moments that had I chosen B instead of A, life would be so different and in a very bad way. Can you think of a moment or like a specific moment in your life where you could have chosen B and it would have landed you either in death, in drugs, in a very different position, but you chose A, which was harder?
Yeah. I remember, I think I was in grade 9 and I failed.
Yeah.
Grade 9. And you know, as I tell you, or grade 8, as I told you, your family is going through it if you know the household budget.
Budget, yeah.
You know, and I knew my dad and my mom scrambled up some money to take us to a school that was better for us.
Mm.
It was Langlachte at that time. And I know how much they paid and how much they make. and I did not pass. And my dad came back to the news that I did not pass, and he smacked me. And I got so angry as a kid, and we were having dinner at night, and I got so angry and I stood up and I left the house. And I grew up in Pimville, which has a golf course.
Yeah.
And I went to the golf course, and it was at night, you know, and it's dangerous there. So when I was walking there, angry, I bumped into a childhood friend of mine there, yeah, holding a beer.
Sure.
And I'm sure he was having a beer there so that no one sees him, because we're young, like grade 8.
Grade 8, you like.
And I couldn't speak, so he just joined me and walked with me. And he gave me the beer.
Sure.
For me to drink. And I obviously tried to drink it, but it never touched my lips. And I remember in that moment thinking, this is not me. Mm-hmm. I know I'm very angry, but I am not this like person. This.
Wow.
You know? And yeah, that friend of mine was one of the people that were taking the wrong turn.
Yeah.
You know, and in that moment, I felt like if I had done that, I would have taken the wrong turn. It's not about the beer, but it's about making that choice in that moment.
Yeah.
Then I told myself that, okay, cool, I'm angry at my dad and everyone, but no, I'm going home. Sure. Then I walked back home.
Sure.
And
that changed your life. I believe that.
Yeah, it changed my life because it would have went
a different way.
Yeah.
I believe, and we spoke a bit about this, that we create from an honest place, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. I know your views, but we're going to talk about them anyway. My best projects or my best work comes from my deficits, comes from my vulnerabilities, my places of insecurity, right? Mm. And like I said, when I'm creating, it's not like, okay, I'm creating because I'm insecure and I want everybody else's insecure to not feel, you know, it's just like you get in that moment and you need something to hold you together and somehow it translates to people.
Yeah.
So looking at your paintings, you started painting not long ago, right?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
And I was looking at your art, and
I'm trying
I'm trying to understand it. And there's I think it's like ghost-like. It's a lot of shadows. Very
spiritual,
Yeah, what does your art say about you? If all we had left was your paintings.
Yeah.
Who is Justice?
Yeah, I mean, my art is a reflection of the journey I'm on.
Okay.
Which, it's a few themes. Reconnecting with my spirituality.
Okay.
I grew up Christian.
Okay.
Very much. And my calling was to be a priest. And my journey was going there. But anyway, so in my personal journey now with my spirituality, I felt like Christianity took away my opportunity to connect with my ancestors.
Okay.
And my ancestors to me are everyone that were from my family before me.
Okay, yes.
And those that were here with me.
Yes.
You know, like I've got a great relationship with my grandparents.
Yeah.
I had a great relationship with them growing up. And when they transcended, they've always been there.
Yeah.
With me and in me.
Yeah.
And my art is a reconnection intentionally with them and that other side.
Okay.
And through my art, I look at, you know, my masculinity and my sexuality.
Yeah.
And how it would have been without all the expectations from my society. Like my dad would say, my son can't be gay or this and all of that. And I grew up upholding all those expectations.
Yeah.
And I never took an opportunity to step back and say, what would I be without any of that, with all that noise silenced?
Sure.
Would I be straight?
That's one hell of a question.
Yeah. So my art is that.
Sure. That's all. So your art is, in my understanding, is a lot of questioning, redefining, internal, like understanding who am I outside of what church and what society and my family fed me. Do you not feel like it's almost like a path that leads to nowhere?
It leads somewhere.
Okay.
It has led me somewhere. Reconnecting with my ancestry intentionally has been beautiful.
Yeah.
Because my relationship with them is no more incidental.
Okay.
It's intentional.
Okay.
You know, and they are present.
Okay.
At any moment.
And now, where's your relationship with God? And going back to, you were supposed to be a priest. So what happened to that?
My relationship with God is so strong.
Okay.
It's incredible.
Okay.
It's even stronger.
How so?
Because I'm honest.
Love that.
Yeah, I'm honest with myself and I'm intentional. Sure. I'm not... I found that when I was in the system of Christianity and all the expectations built around it for me, I was not in control. Okay. I was just in a ride.
Yeah, like do this, do that.
Yeah, you know when you're just riding it out. I was riding it out. And now I'm intentional and present.
Sure.
And honest with myself about what works for me and what doesn't.
Yeah. Love that. You just got married.
Yeah.
But you've been with your partner for like what?
12 years.
12 years.
Yeah.
What took so long? And respectfully, because obviously,
for sure.
Like when, as a girl,
it was not dating. It was not a disrespectful question.
Yes. Yeah, but I know how my others might, like other people don't believe in marriage and others take it otherwise. But for me, if we're dating, like, for 4 or 5 years, it's like, excuse me, sir, like, what's happening here?
I mean, there's a very shallow reason.
Okay.
And there's also a reason of,
I need both answers. I need both reasons.
Yeah, I'll give you. I can start with the shallow one. The idea of a marriage and doing a step and dancing was a nightmare to me. Like all that attention.
Yeah.
For what? So I couldn't do it for that reason.
For a step.
Imagine I'm doing a step wearing a tux or whatever. For me, that's a nightmare.
Okay.
I couldn't do that.
Okay.
And standing in a podium and guys.
It's hectic, As a result, you actually got married in shorts.
Yes.
I love it for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then the second reason, I don't like doing things because they are done.
Okay.
Because everyone is doing it. I don't like that. Okay. And so does my wife. I don't like that. Oh, get married because people get married.
Mm. Oh, it's time.
I don't like that. I think I also don't believe marriage makes love better.
True.
I don't believe that marriage makes a commitment a bigger commitment.
I'll fight you on that one. And
sure,
here's why.
I'm ready.
Okay, I'm not fighting you, but I just think when... I don't know if you know about the seven-year itch. There's something called the seven-year itch. Seven-year itch that everybody believes in. If you survive the seven-year itch, like your love is forever. Because at like seven years, like things are
in marriage or just being together?
I think just being together, right?
Okay.
And then there's the, well, in your case, there's no baby yet.
Yes.
But there's a period after having children, after having your first child, statistically, most couples break up. And I can understand why. Because in our relationship, the period after having children was the hardest, like very, very hard. And I know for a fact, if we didn't have the commitment to our families and to God, I would have been like, sure, shut. And so, so there's something about that commitment to your family and to your God that holds you together when like things are just like, what was I thinking?
I mean, I'm yet to experience that, but in my opinion, having been with my wife that long, without having married her yet, I think the most important thing that has held us together is love and respect.
Okay.
There's nothing more than that. I don't think a document will make you love someone so much more.
I didn't mention a document. I said family.
Yeah, but...
I get you.
Marriage
is
not going to make you keep your husband.
It's not.
You know, so that's what I thought. That
okay.
Cool, Charlotte and I can get married.
Then what?
Then what? Is it going to make our lives better? You know? Maybe. I don't know. But I knew that nothing will be better than this apart from from wasting our money making a 500K wedding. For who?
Yeah.
A day. So anyway, yeah, we decided to get married in a conventional way.
Yeah.
But we did it in our way.
Yeah.
In our apartment. I bought my outfit the day before.
Oh, really?
Yes. But in the lead up, I thought I'll just find something in my wardrobe and wear that.
Yeah.
Charlotte wore her mom's wedding dress.
Yeah.
She just fixed it so that it can work.
Yeah. People you love. What was that turning point where you decided, actually, this is about us now. Let's get married.
I mean, we had done the other stuff like lobola and all that, you know, but a light version.
What's a light version?
A version that is our version.
Oh, which is
I
what?
Don't believe in, as I told you, I don't believe in ways doing things the way other people do them.
Yeah.
We got our families together. We made a braai. We said, cool, this is what we're doing. Cool.
Did then
we
moved in. Lobola?
No, she's not a black woman. So.
Yeah, but for you, you didn't even like...
No, say. Her parents wouldn't allow that.
Oh, wow.
Her dad said he can't take money from me.
Well, that's nice for you.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm grateful for that. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, we did that in our way. And this was just a formality.
Okay.
Also, it was... Yeah, I loved it. We did it in our way. It was cool.
Did anything change? Like the next day, did you feel like,
The biggest change in our life is that I got a guest bride.
That's the biggest change.
And a ring.
From your wedding is that you got a guest bride.
Yeah, and I think it made us even more closer because now every day I'm at work, I think, okay, cool, I have to be at home at 5 so that I can... cook for us.
I don't
think that I've got a wife I need to go back to. I just think it's so nice. I mean, Charlotte and I are so offbeat.
Yeah.
You know, we never sat and ate meals together and we never really did that.
Okay.
You know, I'd have my own dinner, she'd have hers and, you know, it's loose.
Yeah.
It's easy going.
Yeah.
So when I got a guest bride, I hated cooking, by the way. So.
Yeah.
I envied my brother and I thought one day I'm going to get this thing.
And then I got him, he cooks.
Yeah. Then it just made me want to get home and cook for her and I. Then we sit and we eat together and talk and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, yeah.
It's beautiful. Also, dinner's on you every night.
Most of the time, yes.
Love it.
Like 6 nights.
Jeez. Week,
yeah.
No takeaways, nothing. And then where do you get the 7 colors from?
That's not dinner.
That's lunch.
That's lunch.
So where do you get that from?
On the side of the road. What could be better?
Oh no! I can't bring myself to eat food. That Brennan loves like he played.
Yeah, that's the best one.
No, I can never.
No, it's amazing. It reminds me of my mom.
No, because I used to walk from school, right? My school was in town and my dad's office was in town, and I used to walk and I had to pass a taxi rank and I used to see the ladies sit. And cook, and I would look at that oil and be like, I'm sure the oil is from last week. So
yes.
I could never.
That's what makes it slap.
Okay. Enjoy. You said there was a Q&A and someone asked you a question and your answer was, do everything for you.
Yeah.
Not for validation. The process is the goal.
Yeah.
How did you get to that point? Because I think for someone to say that, you must be in an abundant mentality, right?
Yeah.
I believe there's you're either in a lack mentality,
where
everything is from insecurity and it's about getting this next big break, or you're in an abundance mindset where you're just trusting.
Yeah, I mean, abundance, you don't just wake up with the abundance mentality because I'd be lying.
Yeah.
I think for me, it took a lot of failure. Like a lot of failure, you know, crap. Like you try your best and it doesn't work out. And, you know, then you try your best in a different way, then some work out.
Yeah.
And the amount of failure I've experienced made me realize that it's more important to be present through the process. You know, and be intentional through the process of whatever you are working towards.
Mm.
And don't be entitled to the outcome you are looking for.
Mm-hmm.
because yeah, it's not it's all not on you, you know.
Yeah.
Like, for example, being an artist, I can paint as good as I can and yeah. as hard as I can, and the paintings are not bought.
Mm.
You know,
who's and you're showing up that? Every day.
Yeah, you're showing up every day. So if you shift your relationship with your process and not have it be goal orientated mm. rather than being present in the process and find joy in what you are doing. And yeah. yes, achieving the bigger goal when you get to the other side feels amazing.
Yeah.
But don't rob yourself of the joy of the process.
Creating.
Yeah.
Yeah. When did it click for you that I have to let go of the entitlement to success? And I mean, I like you said, your mom said you're special. So I'm sure at the back of your mind, like, you're supposed to make it.
Yeah.
So life... why am I not making the money? I am good. I am showing up. Mm. Like, when did it click to you? It's okay, let it go and just...
Just when things are not going your way. You know, life will beat you up. No, we all go through it. Even my biggest idol, I don't know their journey, but I know they've failed a lot.
Yeah.
I know they've cried even more than me.
Yeah, probably.
So, yeah, so it took that.
Sure.
Because sometimes when things go our way so much, it makes you forget to be human and to be humble.
Yeah.
And life humbled me a lot of times.
Yeah.
And, and that's when the penny dropped, that I can't be entitled because the outcome is not in my hands.
Yeah.
You know, I'm at the mercy of the universe and if it's in my favor or not.
Yeah.
And everyone has their seasons.
Yeah.
You know, I've had a part of my life where it was my season, you know, and I was famous here and this, and I was traveling here and I was doing that. And everyone gets their 15 seconds of fame.
Of fame, yeah.
Or 15 minutes. I don't know the expression. Everyone gets that. You know, and it doesn't mean that when you are in that 15 minutes, it's all glitz and glam.
Yeah.
You know, there's beauty in the struggle, you know, in the failures I've experienced, there are moments that are far much more beautiful than moments of my success, some success I've experienced, you know.
How do you not compare your seasons to your brother's seasons? Because you guys are twins, you do everything together and your work is very connected, but like you said, I'm sure his great season is probably not your great season. So in that moment where you're probably having the worst season of your life and he's having the best season of his life, how do you not compare? I mean, how do you not go into that that lack mentality again of trying harder so I can catch up?
I don't know if it counts so much with my brother and I, because in my eyes, he is me and I am him.
You're
so his win is mine.
Mm.
You know, my win is his. You know, there's no way. Even my wife, even my wife knows that I come with him. You know, when we go on holiday and we're booking holidays, she books for both of us.
Sure. And his partner. Or even if there's no partner.
Yeah, I mean, she will consider his partner. Yeah. Yes, she'll book for all of us. But she knows that, okay, we are planning to, we're going to the UK now, right? For my solo exhibition.
Yeah.
Even before we spoke about it, she called him, hey, these are our dates. This is where we're going to stay. What is, you know, what's your preference? What do you want? I'm going to book us here. This is, you know, and she books all those things, and she would call his girlfriend and say, hey, this is, his girlfriend stays in the UK.
Yeah.
This is our plan. This is the calendar. This is what it looks like. Batuan is going to be here and blah, blah, blah. What flight must I book him back? We are coming back early. He's staying for his girlfriend.
It's a whole thing.
Yeah. Then she knows he's coming back on the 11th. We are going to Cape Town on holiday. Batuan, we going on holiday, these are the dates, this is where we're staying, please update Tana, we're gonna be here till whenever. Jen, he comes with me.
So, I
mean,
I can get why.
But
you
for
should.
My friends,
yeah,
if I'd make the same example for my friends, is I've had my season,
yeah,
and they were happy for me.
Okay.
And they are having their seasons, and I'm happy for them.
Okay.
You know, and we are human. We all have innate jealousy.
Yeah. Or
we have that, but jealousy is a great indicator of something you wish for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So if I feel that, I identify quickly that, oh, sure. I want this for myself.
Sure.
If I want this for myself, why can't I be happy for my friend to have it?
Sure. That is such you know? A good
so
perspective.
So then I'm happy for him yeah. or her that, oh yeah. my goodness, yes.
This is great.
This is what we wanted.
Yeah. Sure.
You know?
Sure. That's
so
good.
Yeah, it's... That's and not to say I don't have jealousy. I do.
I think we all do.
We all do. There are people that are not my people.
Yeah.
For various reasons, and I see them thriving, and their instinct is like, yes, it's that.
Why them?
You know. Yeah. But I'll call myself out yeah. that I wish that was me.
Yeah.
So why am I not? Am I jealous? Yeah. Why don't I celebrate that?
Yeah.
I might not. Celebrating, yeah, but I'll identify that, oh, okay, I'm feeling this way because I want it for myself. Stop it.
Yeah.
Then I'll stop it.
I think it's important you mentioned that. I think we all have feelings of jealousy. And
we do.
It's an emotion like anger and hurt and pain. And I don't like labeling emotions as bad. It's just what you do with that emotion. So once you feel that jealousy, like being able to go back to self and be like, okay, calm down. This is why you're feeling this way. Let's celebrate them so that we combat those other feelings that could do things
yeah.
that are not in line with
I
your
think
character.
We would be lying. Someone would be lying if they say they don't have jealousy
yeah.
or feel jealousy.
It's like people who come and say, oh, I'm just a humble man. It's like, no, you're not.
Never. We are all cocky.
Yeah.
I just have a good and healthy relationship with my ego.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I check it. If you are present, you know that, oh, okay, I'm starting this nonsense.
Sure.
Then you check your ego.
Sure. How did you how did you build a good relationship with your ego? Because ego sabotages everything.
Yeah, I mean, it took a lot of failure and heartbreak.
It humbled you.
Yeah, and life just lifing. And
yeah.
you realize that, yes, if I lead with my ego, this is the consequence.
Sure.
Because when you're egotistical,
yeah.
you set a certain bar for yourself. And
yeah.
if you can't get here, now everyone is like...
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Because,
yeah.
you know, I've been young and I've had a bit more money than a young person should have.
Yeah.
And you know when... Well, I know when that happened to me, it got into my head. And I led with that.
Sure.
And... I failed, or whatever I had, and the money and the lifestyle I had, I lost it.
Sure.
And
so you've lost money before?
Yes.
And then you had to start all over with a new perspective of. Okay.
Yeah, I think everyone has an "I blew it" story.
I don't have one yet.
It does not have to be as literal as "I blew it."
Yeah, you know why I don't think I have an "I blew it" story.
Mm.
And particularly with money,
mm.
I've watched people in my life. I've seen people who have money be comfortable, and I've seen them lose it.
Mm.
And I've seen what that did to their families. And to a certain
yeah.
extent, my family, we've experienced not having, having, not having again. No, not having again.
Yeah, I mean, I don't say, when I say lose it, I'm not saying moving back home.
Yeah, okay. So your blue
account,
is like mid-blue.
Yeah, like being in negatives, you know, and I've got 6 cars.
Ah.
And a
Do you
house
return
in
them?
Benmore.
Okay, like, that's not blue, come on.
But yeah, I know, but
yeah.
that thing will humble you because
yeah.
you are here.
Yeah.
And your bank account is saying, sorry, buddy, you are not there.
You don't know.
You know,
this,
and
yeah.
you have to rough it out. And yeah, I mean, it took mistakes like that.
Yeah.
You know, not going home. Fortunately, I have never moved back to my mom's. But I've made choices where I bought a car and we got a bigger place that we didn't need to. And we're paying so much
yeah.
and whatever. And from month to month, it's like. It's like, but out there, I'm thriving.
The man.
You know?
Sure.
So it took that. It also, I'm lucky, I think I was brought up in a way that, yeah, it's a bit more humble. I've never been like cocky. Yeah. But I know I have, you know, I'm dressed well. Yeah. You know, also, you know, we are boys. I've got very close friends and we love clothes and looking good and this and that. And this is jela, you know, with I call not la.
Yeah.
Smartly tea. You know?
Yeah.
But life shows you that there's so much more to life than how good you look and how much money you have.
Yeah.
You know, and life will humble you with your fat pocket and your fancy face.
True.
You know,
you have such a great relationship with vulnerability. Like, I think you're a very vulnerable person. And I was like, when I, because you do these videos where you do like a voiceover, right?
Mm.
And you like stand and you talk, but like your thoughts are very interesting. And when I found out that you had dyslexia and you were afraid of talking, I was like, what? This man is literally doing a voiceover every single day. And that for me is vulnerability. Do you attribute your success now? And by success, I don't necessarily mean...
Yeah, it's relative.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So without the vulnerability, there's no success for you?
Yeah, for me, because vulnerability has created a space where people can accept me as I am. But if I'm not vulnerable and I'm leading with my ego that, no, I'm just this. Do you know who I am? Do you know what I've accomplished? My shortcomings are not met with grace.
Sure.
You know, so because I'm able to say, hey, I cannot read.
Yeah.
I cannot write well.
Yeah.
But I am a film director. They are able to say, hey, love, don't worry about that. We'll get help for you. We'll get a writer for you. We'll get a researcher for you. We'll get someone that you'll present with.
Yeah.
Will that work for you?
Sure.
But if I walk in and say, do you know who I am? Do you know
look,
I've done
my work? Yeah.
So my shortcomings are not met with kindness and grace and create a space where, I'm accommodated.
Have you always been vulnerable in your relationships?
No.
I'd
learned. I am. My wife is an incredible teacher.
Yeah.
She taught me vulnerability.
Sure.
Yeah, she did. And not just by her being herself. I learned so much. I know I used to be very typical, cocky, defensive. I'm never wrong. You know, in my culture, I grew up my dad saying a man never negotiates anything with a woman.
Sure.
And that's what I believed in, that I'm not going to negotiate with the woman.
Sure.
You know, so I was like that. But I find honesty and vulnerability helps me.
It's for you.
Yeah, it helps me. If I go to my wife and I've done something wrong and I say to her, hey, love, listen, I can see X, Y, and Z I've done made you feel this way. And it wasn't my intention. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And I give her the time to process it. I also don't do it and expect her to say, okay, cool, love, we're fine now.
Yeah.
No, she's entitled to her feelings based on how I made her feel. I can't dictate how she should feel when I'm the one that did wrong.
Sure.
So, but before then, I would just say, angeke.
I mean,
not me. Mm-mm-mm. Not I didn't do it or whatever it is.
Yeah,
I'd
yeah.
deny it
Never
or
you.
Not. Or I remember with my wife, I'd say, I don't want to talk about it. And I've done something wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm leaving her with it to deal with it. And
sure.
she didn't ask for it.
Sure.
Manje, she must carry the cross of dealing with something that is not even hers to carry.
Sure.
You know.
And you know what I've realized in human beings. People think that, I think, let me say, the ego thinks that there's no room to be wrong, and that's why the ego put up a wall, right?
Yes, yeah.
However, vulnerability says, I just want a conversation.
Yeah.
I just want your honesty. Because if you say to me, like now, the reason why I would say I'm never wrong is because my dad told me, Indota does not negotiate.
Yeah.
Then it gives room, like, and the next time, because it's gonna happen, because it's like most of your childhood, that's what you believe.
Yeah.
So the next time you lead with that, there's a bit of grace, even though I won't take it, but there's a grace of saying, or he was vulnerable enough to say, this is where I got it from and this is what I've known my
whole
life. And
with other people, you'll say, you'll account for your wrongdoings and they won't accept it.
And that's okay
and
too.
It's okay. You can't change how other people received your hurt.
Yeah.
You know, intentional or unintentional. Yeah. But I think ego is very much linked to shame.
Yeah, it is.
Definitely. You know, if I've done something wrong, standing up and saying, ish, I did wrong, it challenges my ego.
Yeah.
But it does a bigger disservice to not account.
Yeah. That's the thing with what I know about shame is that it thrives in secrecy, in not talking.
Yeah.
So as long as it's like, I don't want to talk about it, it thrives and it grows and it becomes anger, it becomes resentment, it becomes bigger. But in that moment, if you just like sit down, your ego, and you deal with it, it's like it resolves, in fact, and it creates an even better relationship. But it's hard. It's not so hard.
It becomes easy. I know for me, a lot of people say, yo, Justice is so vulnerable and it's so, how do you, I don't even think of it anymore.
Yeah, it's just who you are.
Yeah, it's just become a part of my life. Also, I think because at home, that's how we are. In my wife and I, we're very...
That's the space.
Yeah, that's the space. If there's something that's not okay that's happened between us, we talk about it honestly.
Yeah.
I won't let her go to bed with the hurt I caused her.
Sure.
We'll talk about it and resolve it so that when we wake up next morning, we are fine.
You can have your eggs and bacon.
Whereas usually I'd say, I don't want to talk about it and it's a week. And I can't imagine how much I'm putting her through in that week.
It's a lot
like
of pain.
Feeling stuck and
it's a lot of
unsure.
Pain.
Yeah.
My last question.
Yeah.
Before I'm getting into like short ones, what's harder, success or the climb?
Success.
Okay. I thought you'd say that.
Yeah, success. Because maintaining is not easy.
Yeah.
Maintaining takes much more work than the climb.
Yeah. Do you ever feel like it can't get better than I've had it?
Mm-mm. I feel like I just started.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean...
I love that.
Yeah.
And that's encouraging because you're about to turn 40. And I think you're young, but I always mention this, there's this idea that like by 40, like you're already too old to start something new, like sekuphelile, like you're on your way to retirement.
You know, my father-in-law said to me, we were talking, like, I'm like, yes, my money game is not gaming, you know? Like, and I was speaking to him through my observations of how I'm moving and things I'm doing and where I think I should be and all that. Then he said to me, I shouldn't be too hard on myself because his money only made sense when he was 55.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, then you also look at entrepreneurs, like international super successful entrepreneurs. Crack it way above 40. And we tend to live our lives creating these expectations that are not realistic based on people we look at from a distance and we think they've always had
they've
it.
Always had it, Gandhi. It's not like that.
Yeah, and you know, here's the reality. Even the most famous person, like a billionaire, let's make an example now. Kanye West.
Yeah.
Do you think Kanye West is happy with his billions?
Hey, I know for a fact it takes a lot.
Yeah, I mean, let's say that money problem is out the way.
There's other problems. There's bigger
problems. He's not dealing with that.
Yeah.
But look at every issue
he
has to carry in his life.
Yeah.
With all those billions. I don't want that life.
I feel like to a certain extent, the money is the... In context, don't cancel me. Money is an easier problem to have.
Yeah, I can agree. Yeah. Because there's so much to life than money. And I was saying earlier to your husband that, you know, there's this thing they say people with money like saying money, it won't give you happiness.
Yeah.
I'm not a person with money. I'm okay.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I can tell you for a fact, if some of the happiness in my super broke days outweigh my happiness now with relatively okay money.
I said that to him as well the other day. These are short questions.
Yeah, sure.
Give me your short answers.
Yeah.
What do you know about love?
It's healing.
Love is healing. Mm. What do you know about God?
Empowering.
Empowering.
Yeah.
What do you know about money?
Stressful. But also empowering.
Stressful, but also empowering. Okay. Mm. A quote that you live by?
You can be whatever you want to be. You can be whatever. As long as you believe it, you work hard towards it, you invest in understanding whatever you want to be, and don't be entitled. Wait your turn.
So we must believe it, but also don't be entitled. And then you must work hard, and then you must wait your turn.
Yes, because your hard work does not equate to success always.
Okay. Fair. Book or podcast you recommend?
Yes, there's a book I love with all my heart because of what it did to me. It's called Sula.
Sula.
Yeah, by Toni Morrison.
Yeah. Never read it though.
Yeah, it's amazing. But my personal experience of it might be different to yours. Okay. It just helped me understand what women go through. And especially the women in my life. It just gave me like beautiful context. And it was so empowering to me to make it a point that I create a space that empowers other women. And their choices in who they want to be and who they become, it's okay.
Sure. I love that. Full the sentences in. A wise woman once said.
A wise woman once said, respect is better than love.
Respect is better than love. Who's that woman?
My mom.
Okay, what was your understanding of that?
If you respect is the ultimate love.
Okay.
Because you can love someone, but if you don't respect them, your love means nothing. Okay. But if you respect someone, you love them.
Automatically love them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because if I respect you, I care about how my actions will make you feel.
Sure.
You know, if I respect you, I care about you beyond my own feelings.
Sure. Yeah.
So respect in all aspects is better than love.
It is love, yeah.
Yeah.
And my last one, thinking of a boy like who might be having the same experience as you did, what would you say to them?
I'd say it's not easy. Invest in yourself. Invest in understanding what you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
Invest in good friendships. Mm. Mentorship is better than education.
Sure.
But education can be good. It's important. Mm-hmm. But invest in mentorship. Find a mentor. And mentor is not always a person that is next to you and you've got physical relationship with. A mentor can be someone you look at from the outside. And you model your life according to them. You take what they've done, you break it down, and you identify how you can do the same for your life and your journey.
Sure.
Yeah.
I love that. I'm so inspired by you. I think, and I know you didn't give me your full story because there's not enough time, but in the bits that you've shared, I can imagine your climb, your life, how hard it is, the emotions you grapple with, the feelings you grapple with, convincing yourself every day that you're worth it, to believe in yourself, to work hard.
Thank you.
It's inspiring for so many. It's inspiring for me, and just your honesty in who you are and how you approach life is beautiful. I love it.
Thank you.
Thank you.